home. He has changed his agenda slightly. He's been in the east. He's met with humanitarian workers. He's been out to Kibati camp, not far from Goma. He was due to go up to Dungu, but now I'm not sure what's happening with that. The latest I've heard is that his agenda has changed.
Now, what has the latest joint operation of Rwandan and Congolese forces done to affect the security of civilians living in the eastern DRC?
Well, as you know, at any time there's any kind of operation by the military or the militia in DRC, there's always some kind of humanitarian fallout. And that's to do with the lack of discipline within the armed forces. That's to do with practices that have become normalized, rape, violence, looting. And so these are all the things that the humanitarian community fears very much could result from the joint operations. Now, to date, the levels of violence and displacement are not as severe as we might have feared. These operations are covering an area with a population of 650,000 people. And the figures we have of those who've been affected so far and have been displaced by the violence range from between 5,000 to 15,000. So if you compare that from before December 2008, the difference is marked. And the humanitarian community, obviously we can't say that things are all right, but certainly things are better than we expected. On the other hand, if you look at the figure of between 5,000 to 15,000 people and you transplant that into America, that's a lot of people, and every family, every individual who's suffering there has to be considered and needs to be protected.
So far, how has the operation of the Rwandan Hutus, the FDLR, been affected by this combined offensive?
We've seen a lot of FDLR and their families who have been coming out of the bush where they are typically. We've seen them going to centers to be demobilized and indeed repatriated. UNHCR has seen greater numbers than they have done on the border of FDLR going back to Rwanda than ever before. That's the FDLR who are now coming out voluntarily, perhaps pressured by those forces and are looking for demobilization. We don't know about the situation of FDLR who might have been caught in military operations.
I've heard that a lot of them have already gotten into business inside the DRC. Have the Hutus thinned out into the Congo and become integrated into the general population? And how hard is it to sort them out if there's an offensive to root them out of the country?
It's not entirely simple. The FDLR are a group who have been in Congo for more than 10 years. Some of the FDLR are Congolese, some of them are Rwandan. They live amongst the community. They're very much a part of the community in some areas, and in some areas they're more of a menace on the community than others. They're also spread out amongst the different provinces, in North Kivu and South Kivu particularly. They know the terrain very well. They know it certainly better than any military who are not from that area will know it. So disentangling foreign armed elements is a very seriously complicated operation.
Do you expect that new fighting will erupt with the Hutu forces very shortly, that it might accelerate in coming days?
Well, I couldn't comment on that. I can say that the international community expected that from the outset, and we haven't seen things on that level as yet. What we look for as a humanitarian agency is a political solution to this rather than a military one. And we support the non-violent persuasion of militia to be repatriated or to be demobilized indeed. But it's very difficult to comment from one day to the next on the situation in Congo because things change every day and because we're not party to all of the information in the same way as we might have been in previous operations.
So we haven't seen any action from the Hutus who have been pursued by the Rwandans and the Congolese, similar to what the LRA did to civilian communities since that offensive began.
We do have some reports of reprisal killings, in fact, and reprisal preying on population. As I said, the figures we've got are between 5,000 and 15,000 civilians affected. Let's not forget that those numbers exist. So the numbers are lower than before, but there have been reprisals against communities from the information that we have from the organizations who are involved in signing on to this statement. It's not an entirely perfect or blame-free operation, and there are still serious protection concerns around it.
How has the presence of Rwandan troops influenced preparations for the handover of CND rebel leader Laurent Nkunda? Is there a separate issue of the reintegration process of Nkunda's followers into the DRC National Army from the actual handing over and prosecution of Laurent Nkunda?
It's easy to speculate, but again, as a humanitarian organization in this case, I mean, it is very easy to speculate, and it would be quite easy to draw conclusions on that one. But as a humanitarian organization, then we support as many militia as possible demobilizing and integrating into the Congolese army. And once they're there, we then support the reform of the Congolese army so that is a good place to be and it's there to protect its civilians rather than preying upon them.
Can we draw any lessons from the Owele joint Congolese offensive against Ugandan rebels as far as the Congo-Rwanda offensive against the Hutu forces at this point? Are there any lessons to be learned?
What you've seen is that the sovereign governments who are part of these operations have to also take the responsibility for protection of civilians. And what you've seen in response to the petition made towards John Holmes yesterday, the Congolese and the Rwandan government both came out and said, yes, they are particularly concerned about protection of civilians. But of course, with the joint Congolese-Ugandan operations, you've seen a massive civilian fallout. And that's something we don't want to be happening again in that area or in any other area of the country. The Congolese and the Rwandans have now spoken out and said, yes, they are responsible for the protection of civilians. So we hope that they will show their good side, their true colors, in making sure that that does happen and does become a part of their mission in the coming days, and that they allow the UN peacekeeper to accompanying that for the purposes of protecting civilians to do their job.
Now, you spoke about John Holmes pressing the participants in the conflict to limit the violence. What measures can the UN Human Rights Representative pursue to keep the level of violence down?
Well, first of all, the UN peacekeepers need to know where the operations are going to be taking place. They need to be able to accompany those operations. In the past, they've set themselves up as a buffer between warring troops and civilians. Another thing they can do which prevents a displacement is the sharing of information on the operations with the civilian population, letting the population know what's happening in their area. They can provide a safe haven for civilians to come and gather around their bases, which you see and have seen since August of last year, to provide that kind of physical protection. They can be there to witness, in the worst case, any kind of human rights abuses. They also have a mandate to stand up and prevent those abuses from taking place and to make sure that the perpetrators of those abuses are brought to justice. But they do need a system there that supports them. This is a deeply fraught conflict. What we've been talking about is what's on the surface. For sure, what we need is all the parties to go, that there are political processes in place. There are agreements. There's the 2008 Goma agreement. There's the 2007 Nairobi agreement. That peaceful political processes will be followed to try and find long-term solutions to these problems. So a short-term military operation is not our preferred option, but while it might move things a little in the right direction, it's never going to provide a permanent solution. And a permanent solution is going to come through things like proper management and taxation of mining, border patrolling, control of weapons trafficking, and looking basically at some of the regional political issues which have been intractable for the last decades and re-establishing diplomatic relations between the different countries and proceeding on a sensible and even footing.
Why has MONUC been left out of the military planning of both joint operations that have been pursued recently?
That's a very good question. And I suppose the next question is, why have the operations that are taking place in the way that they have done? These have been very secretive operations in the way that they've been planned without even the full knowledge of the governments involved. I'm not really in a position to judge there, but I think MONUC has not been left out because they're not capable of doing their job. I think they've been left out perhaps for some security or other internal governmental processes that I don't hope to get at.
Well, the Congo Advocacy Coalition is urging John Holmes to insist on a central role for the United Nations in this peacekeeping mission. Do you think that that will happen?
I think that eventually it should happen, because without the active involvement of the UN in this process, there may not be the technical expertise that is needed to ensure the protection of civilians. And sooner or later, that is going to be sought for. And sooner or later, MONUC is going to be called on to pick up the pieces if things begin to go wrong. So I think with the right amount of international pressure and with the presence and the role that MONUC has had in countries to date, I think there will be an increasing role for MONUC in this process.